I'm going to invite David Denny up to the stage, and as he's coming up, we're going to play a quick clip of a skit that many of you may have seen before, but there is a tie-in here to what David's going to be teaching tonight.
What's on second? I don't know who's on third.
That's what I want to find out.
And then I say, who's on first? What's on second? I don't know who's on third.
Yeah, you know the fellow's names?
Yes.
Well, who's on first?
Yes.
I mean the fellow's name?
Yes.
I mean the guy playing first?
Who?
The fellow playing first?
Who?
The first baseman?
Who?
The guy playing first?
Who is on first?
Well, what are you asking me for?
I'm not asking you. I'm telling you. Who is on first?
I'm asking you who's on first.
That's the man's name.
Well, go ahead and tell me.
That's the man's name.
That's whose name?
Yes.
Well, go ahead and tell me.
Who?
The guy on first base.
Who?
The fellow playing first.
Look. Who is on first?
Have you got a first baseman?
Yes.
Who's playing there?
Yes.
All I'm trying to find out is what's the guy's name on first base?
No, wait a minute. No, wait a minute. Don't mix them up. What is on second?
Who's on second?
No, who is on first?
I don't know.
He's on third now. We're not talking about him.
How did I get on third base?
You just mentioned his name.
If I mention the third baseman's name, who did I say is playing third?
No, who's playing first?
Never mind first. I don't know. What's the guy's name on third base?
What's on second?
Who's on second?
Who's on first?
I don't know.
Third base.
Have you got a third baseman?
Certainly.
Then who's playing third?
Who is playing first?
What's playing first?
No, what's on second?
I don't know.
He's
third base.
Third base.
All right. How many of you have seen that before? Yeah. Okay, so you might wonder, what does that have to do with what we're going to be talking about tonight? So, as you're watching that, if you've never seen that before, you notice that they're having this conversation, but the one guy can't figure out what the other guy's saying, right? The other guy knows what he's talking about, and I don't know which one's which, Abbott and Costello, but they're not having a very good conversation because they're talking about two different things, right? So, what we're going to be talking about tonight is called critical theory. You can go ahead and put the first slide up. And you might be wondering, well, what does that have to do with me? Especially maybe as high schoolers, you're wondering, I've never heard of it, I don't know what it is, and maybe even a lot of the adults here don't know, the parents don't know what that is. But as we start to discuss this, you're going to realize it's actually very prevalent in our society today, right? Something that began in universities and philosophers and has worked its way into our society, and you're going to see what I'm talking about as we continue on here. So what's going to happen is we're going to tie in the critical theory here with social justice, right? And I'm sure you've heard of that term, social justice. It's today very popular, and the word itself, the concept itself is not bad, but the movement, social justice, is something entirely different, all right? And we're going to get into that. This week, we're going to be talking this week and next week, and so I'm going to try to lay the foundations this week, and then next week, I'm going to kind of fill in some of the details about the specifics. All right, so hopefully you'll come back next week. Go ahead to the next slide. Who can tell me what this is? Trojan horse, what is it? Trojan horse, sure, but tell me what it is. Do you know what it comes from and what happened with the Trojan horse? Go ahead. That's right. It's from the Iliad, and the Greeks had been fighting against Troy for like 10 years, and they could not conquer the Trojans, and so they feigned surrender effectively and said they're going to leave, and they gave them this present of this Trojan horse, and they feigned leaving. But inside this Trojan horse, of course, are the soldiers, right? So they're secretly invading the city, and the Trojans were not aware of it, and so they were able to win the battle because at nighttime they came out, right? And so this idea that we're going to be talking about tonight and next week is exactly the same concept, right? A lot of the terminology that we use that you hear today, there's ideas that are smuggled into it that if you're not careful, you're going to be absorbing something that's very ungodly, all right? Okay, next one. He who defines the terms controls the narrative. That's a little offset there. That's okay. So, and if you noticed here, what I did was the terms here is in different colors because that's what we see today, the rainbow flag and what that all represents. We're going to be talking about that. All right. This is an important thing. Just like in Abbott and Costello, what we saw them doing in the conversation, right, they had different ideas of what the terms were. all right? But the one who gets to define the terms really gets to control the narrative. And if you think about that, that's true, right? And we're going to talk about that also, all right? Colossians 2:8 says this, "See to it that no one takes you captive by philosophy and empty conceit, according to human tradition, according to the elemental things of the world, and not according to Christ." That's from Colossians 2:8. Romans 1:28 through 32 says this, "And since they did not see fit to acknowledge God, God gave them up to a debased mind to do what ought not to be done. Though they know God's righteous decree that those who practice such things deserve to die, they not only do them, but give approval to those who practice them." This is where we see ourselves today. All right? Go ahead and pop up the next one there. Okay, how many of you have seen any of these terms here? Woke, patriarchy, white supremacy, heteronormativity, cisnormativity, white privilege, ableism, anti-racist, fatphobia, microaggression. Have you heard any of these words? Most of us probably have, right? And maybe you're wondering, for some of them, what exactly do they mean? Some of them seem obvious. Some of them maybe not so much. All right, well, we're going to be talking about that as we walk through this lesson here and explaining what some of these are, all right, what some of these concepts are. How many of you have seen signs like this? Seen these signs around? Right? So we have, "We believe," and here's one that says, "Black Lives Matter, no human is illegal, love is love, women's rights are human rights, science is real, water is life, injustice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere," and then we have another one there that says similar things. And you see all kinds of signs like this. Well, the first thing I notice when I see the sign is how interesting that other people have creeds too. It's not just us. We said the creed this morning, right? We have a creed, and the world mocks us for having a creed. But guess what? The world has a creed too, right? Okay, and then here's another one. You've seen the equal sign, and then the fist there in the middle of the rainbow flag or different variations of that, right? These all mean something. They all come from somewhere, and they don't necessarily maybe mean what you think they mean, all right? Maybe it does, but it's basically a play on words. You're, in a sense, we're being tricked, all right? Although maybe not completely, all right? Okay, next one. Okay, so we're going to talk about the difference between social justice and social justice. What do I mean by that? Right? There's a capital S, capital J, social justice, right? And that's the first one here. It's a proper noun with a capital S and J, refers to a very specific doctrinal interpretation of the meaning of social justice. In other words, it means something specific. It's not just a generic social justice. It's very specific in the objective, all right? It means of achieving it while prescribing a strict identifiable orthodoxy around that term. Right, and that's a quote from one of the books that I read on this. Just social justice, just the concept itself, is not something that we're opposed to. The general term, it's a justice in a society which is given to all equally. In a Christian sense, one might describe this as biblical justice, a justice which is not partial to the poor, nor deferential to the great. And this is something that we, as Christians, should be the very first in line. Right. We should be first in line to say, we are for this. Go ahead and skip to the next one. So what does the Bible say about it? First of all, before that, I want to say something else. I think most people have a general concept in their minds of justice and a desire for justice in some way, shape, or form. Now, some people, their sense of justice just has to do with themselves, right? They get justice. They understand justice when they're being treated unjustly, but they don't really care about anybody else. But I think most people have some general idea of what justice is and have some kind of a concern for it. I would say most people do in some way, shape, or form, all right? Although in a selfish way, perhaps. But they still have a general idea, and God placed that in our hearts. That's part of being made in God's image. He placed that in us, all right? And So here we're going to talk about what the Bible says about justice. I'm going to quickly run through just some different ideas. And actually, most of this I just simply took from one chapter in the Old Testament, Leviticus 19. Some of it from other places too, but a lot of it. And I'm just going to say up front, if Christians would have been doing this since the beginning of the church, we would have a better voice today. And perhaps there wouldn't be such the pull because the church would already be doing the right things. But here's some of them. All mankind is made in the image of God, and there is no partiality with God. I have the references here next to it, Genesis 1:27 and Romans 2:11. God requires justice, mercy, and to walk humbly before him. God requires that justice be shown without partiality given to the poor and no deference shown to the rich. Right? This is what the Bible says. You're not supposed to show partiality to the rich or give deference to the poor or vice versa. Right? It's supposed to be true justice. It also says hired workers are to be treated fairly. You can go to the next one. Disabled people are not to be mistreated or abused. It says that in the Bible. Right? So Christians should be first in line for believing and teaching these things. When a foreigner lives in your land, you are to do him or her no harm. Right? Now, I want you to be thinking here, a lot of the things on those signs that I had posted earlier, these things are covered there, interestingly. Except the signs mean something a little bit different than what the Bible means, and we're going to talk about that. The elderly are to be honored. Fair practices in commerce are to be practiced. You shall love your neighbor as yourself. These are all from Scripture. And if Christians had been doing these things all along, we would absolutely have a better voice today, I believe. All right? I want you to go to the next one. Go ahead. So here's that picture you've probably seen of Lady Justice. What's the deal here? What's up with the blindfold and the scales? What does that represent? Anyone tell me? Yes. Justice is blind, not showing partiality, right? Justice is supposed to be blind. Okay, next one. So I just, what I was saying earlier, if the church would have been taking a stand all along, we would have a better voice. And I just have some pictures here of some examples. You see a picture of slavery. This one issue of just race relations in America, this is just one example of this, right? If the church would have been standing against slavery, if you look at the picture there on the right, and this black woman going to school, a public school, and you can see just the hatred from the white people surrounding her and yelling, and I'm pretty certain because of that was the South in the 50s, most of them probably went to church that Sunday and were probably members of their church. The one down on the far left there is Rodney King beating, and I put that one in there because that's my first real, I was in the Marine Corps then, and I'll just tell you a quick 30-second story, I hope 30 seconds, when that happened. And I had just left California to go to South Carolina, but I was a Lance Corporal, which is an E3, and I remember right after that happened, a sergeant, which in the Marines you don't have normal, a sergeant doesn't just come up and ask you a question about life, for instance. But he pulled me aside, and I was 19 at the time. He pulled me aside and asked me what I thought about it. This is a sergeant, a black sergeant, asking me what I thought about it, and I was probably 10 years younger than him because he was so bothered by it, and he just wondered what I thought about it as a white man. And that was kind of my first real, not the first time I noticed it, but the first big impact that I can remember in my life. So I just want to say as we begin this, if the church was doing its job, if we were doing what the Bible tells us to do, perhaps we would have a better platform today than we do. All right? So I'm going to start there. Let's continue on. You can go to the next slide, please. So this is critical theory. And if you've seen this movie here where he says, I do not think it means what you think it means. And that's the whole concept here in critical theory, all right? Now, we're gonna talk about how this connects with social justice here in just a minute, but so this is critical theory. I'm just going to give you a very brief outline of what critical theory is, and I'm going to go through the history of it so you can kind of have an understanding. Maybe it'll give you a better idea of why we are where we are, how we got to where we are, and the thoughts behind it, all right? So traditionally, science and reason were used to examine problems in society, all right? And so we're going to talk about the history of it, but from the Enlightenment time, that's what we used to determine things, right? And especially problems in society, specifically what's being addressed today with social justice. Critical theory explicitly aims to critically examine social discourses, right? So how we have discourses among ourselves, the language we use, how we how knowledge is conveyed, not just how it is, but even what kind of knowledge is conveyed amongst ourselves, right? A critical theory is chiefly concerned with revealing hidden biases and under-examined assumptions, usually by pointing out what has been termed problematics, which are ways in which society and the systems that it operates upon are going wrong. Okay? So I have this picture here, and this is just a small example of what we're talking about. What is this? A trash bag on a road. What if you're somebody driving home from the grocery store and something fell out of your car? What is this? What is it? Second trip to the store? Or it's, I had to turn around and pick it up because I dropped it on the road, right? It's my groceries. So it could be trash, could be groceries. What if you just got back from Iraq where if something was in the middle of the road, it might blow up, right? So I'm just giving you three examples here of something that looks similar to, like, that's what they would use in Iraq and in Afghanistan. They would put things in the middle of the road, like sacks that looked like trash. The trucks would run over them, and they would blow up, all right? And so soldiers come back today, and Marines come back today with PTSD. Something like that will make them drive off the road in panic, right? So we see the same thing here, and we look at it, and depending on your viewpoint, it's three different things, even though it's the same thing, all right? Okay, so this is what we're going through the history of it, okay? So beginning with the Enlightenment, we have this idea of modernism or modernity, what we would know as modernity today. And it's probably what we're most familiar with, although it's been undermined for a long time, and things are different today, and we're going to be talking about that, all right? So modernity essentially teaches that human reason is the arbiter and determiner of all truth, so that we're able to use our minds and reason through everything, right? And we can use science and reason basically to determine these things. So here's the unique thing about modernism, though, is we use science and logic as its primary tools, and the ideology aims to perfect the human condition without the need for religion or God. That was the idea. They thought, hey, with just science and reason, we can perfect the human condition without God, right? Now, there were some Christians, and actually we've benefited in many ways from it because, yes, God calls us to use our minds, right? But specifically, the Enlightenment was trying to figure this out without God, without a reference to God, all right? Okay, go on to the next one. We have Karl Marx came along in the mid-19th century, all right? And he looked around and he saw that instead of things getting better, it seemed to be getting worse in a lot of ways. People were suffering more and more as he looked around, right? And it seemed like the human condition, rather than getting better, was getting worse. And so he thought, I think I have this figured out, right? And he said it was because the powerless were unable to free themselves from the chains of the powerful. His call was to unite the oppressors or the oppressed. That's the power. That's the unite together, right? And rise up against those who are oppressing you, right? Specifically, it was the workers against those who were in authority, those who were in power. That was what he was trying to do, right? And so he was trying to wake them up. And if you've heard the term woke, that's kind of where this idea comes from. Wake up, right? And that's the call, all right? So human emancipation became the aim of Marxism. But the problem was, you can go to the next one. The problem was, in the early 20th century, Marx's ideas, instead of things getting better, and by the way, Marx, too, followed the idea of no God. As a matter of fact, he said that religion was, he called it the opiate of the masses. He said that religion was the way for the oppressors to keep the oppressed down. The opiate meaning they were subdued. He kept them subdued through religion. That's what he was teaching, all right? But those countries that were Marxist, instead of being better, things were getting worse. You had the Holocaust. You had even like reason and logic produced Hiroshima and Nagasaki from their perspective, right? And of course, you can look and see the destruction that was caused. You see what happened in communist China and in Russia, and you see all the people that were dying. And so they're trying to figure out, wow, this doesn't seem quite right. It's not fixing the problem. Marx's ideas aren't fixing the problem, right? And so this is where critical theory comes in. So reacting to these failures, there were really three. I won't go into all the names of all the people. I don't even know all their names, but who kind of started thinking through this. Why is that the case? Why is it? And they came to the conclusion that it wasn't just about the oppressed and the oppressors. They thought it's actually much deeper than that. They believed that it was actually the knowledge, the language itself was being used by the oppressors to oppress people, all right? So here's the question. Why was Marxism not effective? And I'm just going to read this off here from one book here. The traditional theory of modernity, which was utilized in Marxism, was found to be neither neutral nor as reflective as its advocates tended to believe. They were trying to use the normal social means, but they came to realize, essentially, wait a second, this is even deeper than we thought. Those tricky oppressors have everything rigged, including the language itself. They've figured out a way to use language to oppress those who are being oppressed, right? The victims. And so then they came up with, as a matter of fact, this is one of the terms, the master's tools will never dismantle the master's house. This was their idea. You can go to the next one here. So there's three really kind of influences, though, who moved it beyond just this concept of language to even specifically develop this idea of knowledge being the powerful and even not being able to trust language itself. And here's the three. Jacques Derrida, Michel Foucault, and what was his first name? Lyotard's the guy's name, Jean-Francois Lyotard. And without going into much details, really, Derrida said, we don't even know what words mean because the powerful make them up. Foucault said, those who are in power are the ones who create what knowledge is. And Lyotard says, goes beyond that and says, they actually even create the meta-narratives. What you believe reality is really like, the stories that you're told, they create all of that. So you have to deconstruct all of that. And that was the whole idea, all right? If you've ever heard of Francis Schaeffer, he wrote this book 50 years ago almost, The God Who Was There. And he saw this. He saw the dangers of this, and he wrote about this nearly 50 years ago, describing basically what's taking place today, all right? So go on to the next one. So if you've seen this bumper sticker before, be more skeptical, or great minds are skeptical. This is the whole idea. Now, are we supposed to be skeptical as Christians? What do you think? Yes, no? What does it mean to be skeptical? Yes. There you go. Be critical of an idea or thought. Now, that's not a bad thing. That's actually a good thing. Don't just believe everything you're told. There's some good to that. But you have to land somewhere. So what results from that is what's called postmodernism. So we talked about what modernism is, right? Where we have knowledge that comes through science, and we can perfect humanity from science, from reason, from those kind of things. Postmodernism is what comes after that. And these three men and others kind of popularized this, all right? So that the idea is be skeptical of everything and deconstruct everything. And that's what their goal was, and that's what they were trying to do. So the resulting ideology of critical theory became this postmodernism, which is just simply be skeptical. And there's a term for this. It's called deconstructionism. Well, you can only be skeptical so far, because at some point you have to hit bottom and you have to have a foundation. So we're going to talk just very briefly about what knowledge is. So here's objective knowledge. Objective knowledge is there are, and this is just one example of of, I'm going to be talking about postmodernism in just a minute here. But here's we're going to walk through objective and subjective knowledge. So objective knowledge says there are only two genders, male and female. Based on this, we know there are two genders, male and female. We can look and see at the picture here. There's a male and there's a female, and we can study them, and we can look and see. That's a male, that's a female. There's two, right? And we can see that. That's objective knowledge. So knowledge that is true and accurate based on its correspondence with the object in question. That's objective knowledge. Or knowledge that matches reality. Okay, and go to the next one. Subjective knowledge is considered true and accurate based on the subject observing the object rather than its correspondence with the object itself. So essentially it's saying, I think there are only two genders, male and female. That would be subjective knowledge. Now technically, my subjective knowledge can also be objective, right? If it's accurate. But my subjective knowledge doesn't determine that, all right? Go on to the next one. Postmodern knowledge says this, right? There are only, and this is just this one example, this is how it would do with genders. There are only two genders because you think there are only two genders. Like, that's the reason for it. The only reason you think it does is because the power structure in society has conditioned you to believe that in order to benefit their power. It was made up by the powerful. So we should deconstruct the belief that there are only two genders because it oppresses those who believe they are not one of the two genders. And you've seen this take place today, right? And this is just one example of this playing itself out, all right? Okay, go to the next one. So what we're left with is, in postmodernism, a car without an engine. You've destroyed the engine, now you have nothing. You're just left with a hollow car that can't do anything. That's postmodernism. You're skeptical all the way down to the bottom. Now you have nothing to build on that. This is where social justice comes in. All right? Go on to the next one. So social justice is reconstructing language now. Reconstructing language. Reconstructing knowledge and meta-narratives such that those in the oppressed groups will no longer be oppressed. So we're going to redefine terms in such a way so that those who are now victims and the oppressed, and by the way, you need to define who the oppressed are, right? And they have defined who that is. The current system of oppression is now labeled white supremacy, patriarchy, heteronormativity, cisnormativity, ableist, and fatphobic, with the possibility of this list growing. You've probably heard some of these, right? Okay. Okay, next one. So that's now the engine that's being placed in. Social justice is now this engine that's being used to kickstart now this really positive postmodernism. As a matter of fact, some have termed it applied postmodernism, a way to apply into culture and fix the whole problem that Marx said was there, which is the oppressed versus the oppressor. What does the Bible say the problem is with the world? Sin. That's the problem, right? And it rests in each one of us. None of us are innocent, right? Whether you're oppressed or the oppressor, it's sin that's the problem, right? So here's critical theory. The master's tools will never dismantle the master's house. So it's short for critical social theory, right? It's developed to address the failures of Marxism, sometimes referred to as neo-Marxism, if you've heard those terms, right? Some of these are maybe bigger words for you, but I'm trying to explain where this comes from so that we can explain why the ideas have reached where they are. It critically examines discourses to reveal hidden biases and assumptions, discourses which are used to keep the oppressed under the oppression. It's focused on the other. It's always the other, the ones who are on the outside. That's the ones that it's focused on. And they're the ones now it's basically turnabout as fair play. They believe there's a zero-sum game in power and in money and in everything, all right? So that in order for this person to rise up, you need to knock that other person down. Right? That's the concept behind all of this. It's a zero-sum game. Instead of saying we should lift everyone up, we should treat everyone fairly, all right? The problem, though, is we're going to learn more next week. We don't have time for this today. I didn't have time to get into all this today. So that's why it's 2 weeks, is that some of these oppressed groups, these others, are actually, the lists are considered in the Bible sinful. Right, so we're taking, and that's what they've done here for some of these terms. Like, we would all agree, I hope, that racism is a sin, right? We would all agree that men should not be abusing their wives or talking poorly of women, right? We would all agree with those kind of things. So there's some parts of what they're saying that we say, yes, I agree with that. The problem is they've lumped them all together. Next week, we're going to talk about this more. They've been lumped all together. All right, so that now if you're for one, you're for all. And by the way, there is no salvation in this system. All right, there is no salvation. There's not even repentance. All right, you just have to accept the way things are. And by the way, you cannot just say even live and let live. You have to affirm in this system. All right. So, as we walk through some of these, we're going to go into these next week, but you can see some of these. We're going to talk about each one of these, and we're going to talk about how, as Christians, we can say yes to that, to most of these on here, we can say yes to. As a matter of fact, I'd have to think about it. Depending on what you mean, we would say yes to all of them. I would have to make sure. But the meaning of each one of them has been distorted, so it probably doesn't mean what you think it means. For instance, love is love. What does that mean today? Love is love. Honey? Yeah, love is love. You can love whoever you want. Jim was talking about that this morning. But that's not what the Bible says. Love does not rejoice in unrighteousness, but rejoices with the truth. That's the biblical definition of love, right? So we would say something different than what they mean. So it sounds good, and we'll talk about these again more next week, right? So next week, I'm going to explain some of the theories that have come out of these. And by the way, these are all in your schools. I'm going to tell you two quick stories, and then you'll be done and be dismissed. One is almost 20 years ago, there was a young man that was in the youth group. He went all the way through middle school and high school. His sister still goes to church here. She's married and has kids. His mom still goes here. But I worked with him in the junior high and in high school. And when he was in high school, I used to meet with him for breakfast, and we had a Bible study together and would read books together. He went off to a Christian college, and he was exposed to critical theory. I didn't know that's what it was. I didn't even know what it was. But he is now an atheist. And a year later, he was a full-blown atheist. Right? This is how much it had undermined. And I remember him calling me up, telling me that we can't even know what words mean. And I didn't know what he was talking about. And I said, we're having a conversation, aren't we? Why are we talking then? Right? Which I thought was clever. But I was seeing that I was missing the entire point of what he was learning. So he thought I was just some dumb hillbilly from Indiana. Because I didn't know what he was talking. I was thinking, this makes no sense. But now I see what he was exposed to. This was 20 years ago, all right? And I actually had a conversation with my son, was in a Christian school, and I had a conversation with the person, and Andy knows what I'm talking about, who is in charge of the Bible department at this Christian school, who is a fan, told me this himself, he's a fan of deconstructionism and postmodernism. He's a fan of this in a Christian school. All right, so this is infiltrating everywhere. Next week, I'm going to read some quotes for you from even like Purdue University. Okay, this is how it's infiltrated all the nation's schools, almost all of them. And you probably just don't know, people don't know this, right? But it's infiltrated all of them, so much so that in the engineering department at Purdue, they're actually promoting now, and they published a book that said that we now need to have different ways of assessing truth in mathematics. We can't rule out the emotions. I'm going to read this to you next week. All right, I'm going to read you the quotes from the materials. All right. So This is the end of this week. Did I have another one on there? Yeah. So next week, we're going to be talking about post-colonial theory, queer theory, critical race theory, feminism and gender studies, disability and fat studies, and then intersectionality, which is the combining of all of those. Okay, these are big words. I promise you, though, if you go to college, and even if you don't, you're going to be exposed to these things. So if nothing else, I want you at least to hear beforehand, or maybe you're hearing these things right now, perhaps if you're talking with friends online or whatever, right? So as you break out in your small groups, you can start to talk about these things, maybe share some of your questions or experiences. Parents, you can stay here if you want. And I am not an expert. I've read books before on this, but it's only been about, a little more than a year ago when I really started intensively studying this because of the conversation I had with the Bible department, all right? So I'm not an expert, but I'm willing to talk to you or try to answer any questions that you might have. All right.
Yeah. So thank you, guys. So we're going to break up into small groups. Parents, stay here. Hopefully you guys are starting to see why I thought it was so important that we start to dialogue about this. It's something that you guys have been really facing probably for years now, but it's been in your face for at least the last 6 months, and it's something where we want to help you to be able to dialogue about it based on Scripture. So anyway, I hope you guys see the importance of it. Again, come back next week, and you'll kind of tie up some of those loose ends. If you have questions, we'll talk to your small group leaders, and we'll try to put out some more resources this week for the families and students to kind of look at your own time. Thank you all.